Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Matt Broughton, editor of Exchange Wire, and I'm delighted to be joined by a special guest today, James Pringle, founder and CEO of Suggestive. Hello, James.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. And I'm also delighted to be joined by the very festive presence of Exchange Wire CEO, Kieran O'Kane.
Thank you, Matt. Just like tell the listeners, I love pie.
That's going to be his slogan for 2020.
I am the pie minister tomorrow.
We'll have to have flags made up
for
it.
Yeah, exactly. Pi r squared.
So our first news story of the week is that Group M have released their global advertising forecast for 2020, with a slowdown in ad spend growth predicted, which will be at 3.9% compared to 2019's growth rate of 4.8%. Now, for wider context, the forecasts also predict a 0.1% contraction in global GDP next year, which will fall to 2.5%. Now, within that, digital ad spend is accelerating, with internet-related advertising now, to quote, unambiguously the most important medium globally, according to the report. Digitally native brands, which are not typical holding co-customers, have driven a substantial proportion of this growth. Now, the report also highlights the opportunity in emerging markets, with India and Brazil cited as potentially overtaking established markets, such as France, by 2024, while also TV ad revenue is expected to contract by 3.6%, which is 5.5% if political advertising is also accounted for. And this is unlikely to grow in future on an underlying basis. So lots to unpick there. So I think my first question is, will we continue to see the digitally native brands drive internet ad spend, or will we see this plateau? James, what are your thoughts?
I think so. I think it makes sense. I think it's quite good that we've got these new kinds of advertisers that are digitally native, and they are using the mediums that they believe in to promote their own businesses. I think it's also positive that personal consumption expenditures are staying strong. So there is a reason to advertise at the moment. It's not like people are really withdrawing from spending. So on that point, I'd say that, you know, the report is fairly positive, even though there have been some downgrades. And with everything going on, people are still spending. It's still worth advertising to them. And that is shown by the biggest companies in the world that are the kind of new wave tech businesses like, you know, eBay, Facebook, Booking.com, who are all spending over $1 billion each on advertising each year, which is amazing and just shows, you know, how strong this market actually is. So that's what I'd say about the digital-to-digital spend.
I think it's hilarious. Well, not hilarious. I think it's interesting that, like, the biggest spenders are not wholeco, typical wholeco companies. And this demonstrates what is happening in our space. This, you know, this rush towards digitization of media and the rush to platform-based media, data-driven media. And it's not in the favor of wholecos. I mean, this report, it kind of exposed how the difficulties that the holdcos are in, because these are not your typical CPGs, which is what the holdcos have built their power base on. I think it's fascinating. I mean, and also the decline in traditional TV, which has also been a mainstay of the holdco company. So, like, it's like they're dictated, like, it's like predicting their own downfall in many ways, this report. It's fascinating. I think it's good for our industry, because, like, we live and die by outcomes. You know, it's data driven, right? And of course, the creative is still important, TV is still important, but the way that we execute campaigns, the way that we use data, it has a huge say in this. And as James was talking, pointed out, the digital native brands are embracing the platform based world, and it's just not Facebook and Google, right? If you think about the 1,000 platforms will bloom in 2020, if you will, anybody with first party data could spin up their own platform. ITV, who we had Lara in from ITV a couple of weeks ago, she was talking about ITV's platform, and it's very much a walled garden. Roku buys Dataxu, another walled garden. You know, the Pinterest, the Snaps, you know, even Ozone over at the publishers will probably collate a lot of those publishers and build a really, really premium based walled garden. So even though these sound like fragmentation and this should be good for agencies, it's not really, because it's very much platform data-driven based stuff. And a lot of that could be done in-house, right? So that's kind of one of the other things probably. I'd love to see if that report was talking about there's a lot more in-housing going on because of this platform-based move. I just think there's a lot more going on here. It's fascinating. When I was reading the report going, wow, I mean, Brian, we were just talking about, you know, this is a good thing from a group end base. Is it really, though? I'm not really sure it does. Bode well for them.
Yeah.
Do you see, in terms of their model, do you think that they've got solutions in the back pocket that they're ready to bring out, or is it kind of bluster?
I mean, in fairness to them, they've been trying to reposition their businesses, and Publicis has probably gone through a lot of hurt in that respect, in terms of, you know, they've consolidated quite a lot of the businesses. They've bought Sapient, they bought, is it Exelon or the, whatever they... One of those big data platforms. Yeah, it always escapes me. There's so many of them. Axiom. Is Axiom? Axiom was IPG, was it? Oh, anyway, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Epsilon.
Epsilon, that's it. That's it. Sorry, not Exelon. Exelon's a completely different company altogether. I think it might be an Israeli ad network, actually. I don't know. It's a good question, Matt, because they're kind of standing at a precipice, and I kind of did a 2020 predictions piece this morning talking about that. They're at this crossroads. I think some of them might end up in PE hands because they could break it up and there's value there for sure. But will they be able to accelerate to meet the demands of the market, right? It's no longer a typical market for them in the sense that the big CPG clients are kind of scaling back a lot of their spend. The big digital native brands are accelerating spend, but they're much more in tune with the platform-based buying than the old guys, right? And TV is traditional TV, linear TV is starting to decelerate. It's actually decreasing, I believe you said. But yeah. TV's not going away because there's AVOD and there's all sorts of like CTV. So that's a huge growth area for but that's, again, that's platform-based. That's data-driven. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't work at WPP and I don't work at Publicis and I don't work at IPG, so I'm not really sure. I mean, some of them have made some good bets, like the Dentsu buy in America. That's obviously gone very well for Dentsu. But I'm not... I can't see how in-housing really benefits a holding group when then it's just a consultative layer on top of that.
Yeah, it can't do. And I 100% agree with the platform market. It's definitely shifting that way. Why wouldn't you want to spend on a platform if they've got better data, better formats?
Better outcomes.
Yes, there's limited or no third-party verification, so that's still a challenge.
Attribution's a challenge,
and
I guess.
Attribution's a challenge. But on the whole, as those platforms make it easier and easier to manage campaigns, etc., on their own platforms... You know, it is a threat to the traditional holding cos.
Yeah. How do we tone that on his head? I'm positive to attacking the whole cos. I'm not attacking the whole cos. I just think it is a trend that they have to work against. You know what I mean? It's hard. It's a, you know, they're a legacy media business, and now we are fully digitized. I mean, you're talking about the growth of digital there, and it's only going to get more. More spend is going to flow to digital, like, you know.
Yeah.
In my view.
But I think it all comes back to data again. If the holding companies can prove that they can manage a client's data and then off the back of that media spend as a result, then there is huge value there. I think a lot of their clients probably aren't managing their data in the best way possible at the moment. So I'd say that's the key at the moment, is making sure that they're having that conversation and not just talking about the old stuff.
Yeah, the FTE, the boots on the ground, which doesn't really matter anymore. I mean, you still have to have people in Poland talking to the Polish radio companies, but that, if the world is becoming truly platform-based and you don't really need to have that many people, and the FTE model goes out the window, as James says, then it becomes the consultative conversation. It's like, how do I manage my data? And then maybe that's a slimmed down version of what the whole codes are, which is basically, you know, bodies behind desk that they can charge the client for. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard.
Yeah. Do you see kind of the whole platform and data-driven push as such? Do you see that as the main explanatory factor between the fact that markets like India and Brazil are emerging at such pace that they're overtaking France? Or is that an opportunity for the holdcos to get their foot in the door before that really happens in those markets.
India is interesting because it's a mobile first market, so you could argue that probably that's accelerating quite a lot of the media spend. I mean, obviously their economies are growing quite strong as well, but I don't know. India still has issues around, you know, low CPMs and basically very heavily a Google dominated market. Like, we know ourselves, 98% of the market is dominated, digital market is dominated by Google. But you could argue that maybe, you know, the mobile penetration in India is insane. Like, you know what I mean? The growth of WhatsApp in that market is absolutely astonishing. And obviously Facebook have a huge market as well. Mm-hmm. So you could argue probably that is one of the, I don't know enough about Brazil, but certainly probably India is you know, heading that way in terms of digital, like, and probably accelerating growth.
Yeah, I'd say that it's funny because in the sort of high CPM markets, the promise of programmatic with better targeting, better data, etc., hasn't necessarily resulted in higher CPMs. I think that one of the pros and cons of the growth in emerging markets is the pro is obviously increased user base, easier access to audiences, etc. The con is the low CPM. But if the data and targeting is strong enough, we may see that change. And I think the promise that we had in the Western markets of higher CPMs didn't come true, but I think it could happen in emerging markets. And I think that, yeah, I mean, we've got like 60 million people in Nigeria coming online in the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, there's huge changes in where these audiences are and how global brands want to target and attract those audiences. So yeah, and maybe the holding companies can use that as their leverage, that they do have expertise in every market. Yeah. And they're globally distributed as well as the clients, so they can support that.
That's true, and there's still value there for sure. We're not writing off the holding groups at all. I'm just saying, sure, they have to re-architect their entire model, but they do have, yeah, key USPs that probably nobody else except Accenture or, you know, consultants, but then that's their new competitive set as well. So another layer of shit to deal with.
Okay, so moving on to our second story of the week. This one comes courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. You and Mr. Jones, a self-styled brand tech firm, has raised $200 million in a funding round, which values the company at a total of $1.3 billion. The company's services lend themselves heavily to helping established firms in-house their digital marketing activities, which were typically outsourced to the traditional agencies. The company boasts the likes of Hertz and Adidas among its clients, and has most notably helped Unilever establish its internal ad studio, U-Studio.
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 Nice.
So, given the firm's heady valuation, along with the rise of similar nimble agencies such as the likes of Sir Martin Sorrell's S4 Capital, is this the dawn of the age of the independent?
Absolutely. I think this is the decade of the independent, right? So, like, let's talk about the trends, right? So, I don't know enough about you, me and Mr. Jones, or where the fuck they're from. What are you calling? You and Mr. Jones.
You and Mr. Jones.
Right. So, I mean, like, you know, they're massive in the US. They've clearly built a fairly strong independent agency. But, you know, it's just, there's a ton of opportunity here, right? If we look at the fragmentation that's coming, right? So if you think in-housing is going to happen, it is happening, right? So the DTC brands, the digital native brands, the challenger brands have already in-housed most of that proposition, right? The platform-based thing means that they can start buying CTV and digital out of home and audio and all the rest of it. And that's coming in, right? So the bigger brands are saying, look, we can in-house a lot of this stuff. The value add for an independent agency is, how am I going to make sense of this complete mess of platforms, right? So it's all well and good having UIs into all these different platforms, but how do I stitch together my measurement, my attribution, making this work? Like, you know, for instance, we look at ITP, right? Apple. Like, a lot of people have just piled programmatic into Chrome because Chrome still allows the same practices that we had before in terms of retargeting and, you know, behavioral targeting. Apple has just taken a firebomb approach to this, right? So, but you can't ignore that group of people. That's 40% of the web in the Western market, which is where people have money in terms of spend. So this is where I think independents have value. It's been able to kind of make or build a proposition around that and then around all the other platforms. So I'm very bullish around independents agencies. I think there's huge opportunity, and obviously Sir Martin Sorrell has proved that he can go from $0 to $1 billion in valuation, which is incredible in a 2-year basis. But he's building out that next gen business, and as is you and Mrs. Jones. Is it you and Mrs. Jones?
You and Mr. Jones.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
What's the song? Me and Mrs. Jones, is it?
Yeah. So I'm not sure whether it's a play on that.
Yeah, I think maybe that is.
Kind of makes it sound like a trouser manufacturer. You and Mr. Jones, the best slacks since 1937.
I love it. Yeah. Maybe that's their next pivot when it all goes to pear-shaped. But yeah, I think the independents have a massive role to play. And it's going to be exciting because, you know, that service layer is more important than ever. As James pointed out, the data piece, right? It's not just the media piece, but the data piece, the attribution piece, the measurement piece, that activation management piece is hugely important to big brands, right? And as we get closer to a full privacy world, right, a privacy first world, the value of an independent to kind of work with the brands to figure out what their data strategy is, work with vendors and make that all work together, like, you know, because the Oracle guys and the Salesforce guys and Adobe guys don't want to be getting into the messy managing piece of clients. There's going to be a big layer for independents to make money there. So yeah, I'm very bullish.
Yeah.
10 more years.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that is shown in the investment and the valuation of you and Mr. Jones. I'd also say that the acquisition of Oliver in January
is
hugely important because they, I think, are credited with basically inventing the in-house model. And
don't forget Jellyfish and Trade Lab buying Jellyfish.
Yes. And I think that was a really smart move. And so that was just the first point. The other thing I would say, you know, as Kieran said, data again. So as data becomes more central to the client and their organization, it makes sense to have a closer, more transparent relationship with your agency. And that could be developed either as an in-house agency, maybe in partnership with a consultancy, or it could be using an independent agency that isn't restricted by its kind of legacy. And so where data can be used more effectively while maintaining control, I think brands will, well, clients will navigate towards that. And I think that, mm-hmm. that is natural. The second point is just around the supply chain. So in-house agencies and independent agencies have a greater chance of success nowadays because of the programmatic landscape or the biddable landscape. Let's call it the biddable landscape.
Yeah.
Because once where an agency's budget under management might dictate their fees or the rates they could negotiate, this isn't the case anymore.
No rebates.
Hashtag no rebates. If someone has £10 bid on a video placement, it doesn't matter whether they spend £1 million, £10 million, or £10. If they have the highest bid, they will win that placement. Mm. So the size of your budget doesn't determine where you can and can't put your campaigns. And I think that's hugely important to another one of the reasons why in-house and independent agencies trend is going in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's I think the biggest problem, which is also one of the things that's never discussed in the industry, is which I find incredible, is the rebate economy, which it's literally has hamstrung this industry. Right, the fact that big holding groups have been driven down on cost, and because they're wedded to the FTE model, they've been taking big lumps of money and then control a lot of spend and get kicked back a ton of money. And like, anybody who denies it is a liar. It's a lie. It's an absolute lie. I have people telling me we don't do rebates. Absolute horse shit. What do you think trading directors do at agencies? They do deals. And they do trading deals, and that's how agencies get kickbacks. And, you know, it's not straight, I'll direct debit like £100,000 in your bank account. It's true, like, very sophisticated ways. Like, I mean, that's the reason why the smartest people in finance work at agencies, because they have to be the most creative, right? Particularly if they're being audited or whatever by procurement or an outside auditor, right? So it's kind of like, it's the unwritten rule. If you move to a transparent medium, right, which is what we're talking about, a bit of a medium, And by the way, I'm still bullish on ad networks in this non-cookied world, but I'm talking about the vertical ad networks, but there's a place for them as well. But I'm talking about Bidwell Media. It's transparent, right? As James said, the amount of fees that middlemen are taking is incredible, right? You shouldn't take 20%. It should be low single digit numbers. It's like, it's a bit like the exchange, you know, the New York Stock Exchange takes penny, small percentages on each of the trades, and that's how they make their money. That should be almost commodity, right? It's just a facilitating a buy and sell relationship between the media seller and the media buyer. And I think that's the exciting things. And I think these new independents are building models that suit the new world, right? The monetization model they have is completely different from what the holding groups had previously.
Yeah, I mean, the client is charged up front, so they know what they're getting themselves into. And then everything else is spent on results-driven media.
Yeah.
Where do you
hopefully
see...
Well, it can all go to shit. We can be back to rebate models. Just play the game.
Where do you see these, say, 3 to 5 years down the line, where do you see these independent agencies heading? Because you see, say, the likes of you and Mr. Jones, according to the article, they've invested in the likes of Pinterest and Pokemon Go developer Niantic. Do you see that as a case of trying to hold on to as much data as possible before it really does go to shit in terms of privacy regulations?
Right.
Or do you see them continuing those types of investments and acquisitions going forward?
I mean, it gives them an advantage, I guess, because they own the actual data itself, right? So they're not owning third-party data, which is a dangerous place to be right now. It's actually the data they own. But I don't know. I mean, I see some of these getting to a ceiling in terms of growth. They won't go. I think maybe 5 billion is probably going to be the biggest. But the beauty of this is you're redistributing a lot of that holding group spend and valuation across thousands of companies that have value in the ecosystem. Maybe there will be someone to roll them all up, and we come back to like the old. It's kind of like a typical cycle. You know, we had consolidation of the service layer, and now we're going to have fragmentation. And maybe in 10 years' time or 5 years' time, we'll kind of like consolidate again. But I don't see that happening. I mean, a lot of the exciting M&A. stuff in digital media is around agencies. Like the last couple of months and years, we've seen a lot of PE firms buy in. These are good businesses. They could be very, very good businesses. So, yeah, I think that the competitive advantage will be limited. I don't see any of these independents owning their own tech. In like DSP or I could see them API and maybe building a dashboard and helping to feeding all of these platforms and giving the client sort of insight into what's happening. Yeah. But that's more of a layer rather than tech.
Yeah.
But that's where I see the value. And then just having really good people, right? I mean, like, not, you know, just basically people moving around numbers in a spreadsheet, but actual data scientists, analysts, that kind of new breed of agency person.
Yeah, I'd say that this is probably where S4 Capital has the advantage, because Sir Martin Sorrell has been there and done it.
Yeah.
And
he wrote the script.
And although the CEO of you and Mr. Jones was CEO of Havas and, you know, has that big agency experience, he wasn't necessarily the mastermind behind, 20, 30 years of M&A deals that, changed the landscape of the industry. So I think if you were to back a horse, you'd probably be looking at someone like him. But that's not to say that they can't all do it. And obviously you and Mr. Jones have made a really smart acquisition with someone like Oliver. But I think it does come down to smart M&A. So these are proper businesses that are, the corporate development side is just as important as how they handle clients and how they manage the day-to-day, because that's ultimately where the growth is going to come from, is by piecing the right pieces together.
Definitely. So moving on to our third news story of the week, the Trade Desk has announced a new partnership with EBX, the digital ad sales collaboration between Channel 4, Mediaset, ProSiebenSat 1 and TFI, enabling the customers to buy EBX inventory on a programmatic basis. So, you know, with streaming coming to the forefront and, like we say, traditional linear TV, you know, contracting slightly, are we seeing a breakout moment in connected TV?
James, you can take that for us.
I would say that, well, the first thing I'd say is that we're never going to lose the big black box in our living room.
Well, we should.
TV is always going to be there, really. And actually, with more options now than ever, that's more so than ever. I think that although ad spend may be down, I would say that consumption of TV, large screen TV, is probably holding pretty strong, mm-hmm. and might even be increasing with platforms like, you know, Disney Plus and Apple TV launching this year, and DAZN is doing really well in international markets and things like that. So there are many more options. So that's the first point. In terms of actually connected TV, I think there is still a surprisingly limited amount of CTV inventory available. I think this deal is a big step forward, because I think this does open up, you know, a major DSP to hopefully significant inventory levels. There are still concerns around the complexity with GDPR and CCPA on CTV, but ultimately I think it's the ideal format if it's executed correctly. It's large screen, engage user, sit back experience. If you can then add programmatic into that, or biddable into that, then it's the ideal format for a brand, really. I just think we're still limited in the amount of inventory, and there are, with any kind of emerging format, there is always going to be nuances that need to be ironed out. But I think it's a hugely exciting area, and you know, you just have to look at someone like Roku's share price or even the Trade Desk share price this year, and you can see that those companies are growing really quickly, and there's a reason for that. It's because they're offering something that their clients want, and it's an exciting area.
So I think that that's a good point, but the CCPA and GDPR piece is probably less complicated than CTV, because you know, it's reach and frequency a lot of the brands are looking for, right? It's a brand metric, as opposed to like some shitty cookie window that's not going to be available in 6 months' time. Like
the that's very brand. True. That's very true.
I think there's a massive opportunity there, and this is a good step. And it's encouraging that it's the Trade Desk and not Google. It just actually makes me feel happy inside, you know. And you know what, the Trade Desk, and I've said it before on a couple podcasts, the Trade Desk have done an awesome job in repositioning and changing market mindsets around them. Because like, go to Wall Street now, yeah, they're a connected TV company. You know, they're not in display. Well, they are, but they've completely changed the perception. And I think that they've been riding that wave pretty well, because obviously CTV inventory is still limited, but this goes a long way, right? And I think there's going to be a couple of big things next year, right? I think we're going to see more AVOD arrive on the shores of Europe, and we're going to see some local players pop up as well. I was having breakfast with someone this morning who said there's an AVOD service in Greece that does Greek content, and there's one in Nordic that does Swedish and Norwegian. I was like, oh, that's amazing. So you're going to get a lot of these indigenous, native popping up, and they're all ad-funded. So there's a huge opportunity there to kind of build out that ad-funded model, right? So I think Hulu will arrive in these shores next year. It's an ad-funded model. I think you're going to see probably the likes of NBC and HBO. Well, HBO is more of a subscription-based, but you're going to see more of these ad-funded channels or hybrid channels. You want ads or do you want subscriptions? I, for one, have no problem with TV ads. I just don't see this. I don't understand this notion that people hate ads. I think TV ads, more so than display ads or retargeted ads, which are shit for the most part, TV ads are a great experience. Like, they're fun. They can be absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
To build brand, it's just fabulous. Like, so I think there's going to be a swing back from that SVOD world to the AVOD world in the next couple of months, because we've hit this peak subscription. I think the population just cannot keep affording to pay for, you know, I mean, look, beyond Disney Plus, which I think is probably going to be a must for people who own families and people who are into like the franchises like Marvel and Star Wars and stuff. Like, it's a no brainer for people like that. But Apple TV for me, I just don't see the logic. I'm not an Apple customer, so outside the US, I think they're going to fucking struggle, right? I mean, Android has an 83% penetration in APAC. In Europe, it's probably 65, 70% penetration. So the bundle, or rundle, as Scott Galloway, recurring bundle, doesn't really apply. It applies to some people. So outside of that, though, what are you going to start paying for? Like, you just that's it. For me, that's this idea that people can keep paying for subscriptions is nuts, because it just doesn't make any sense. And remember, I do believe that this subscription, people will pay for stuff, is a US-centric mindset, right? Because they're used to paying for cable. We are not, in Europe, we have not been schooled or conditioned to pay 150 quid a month for subscriptions. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
We get free TV here. The BBC in the UK, RT in Ireland, and then you've got a wave of free TV across the continent. It just doesn't cut any ice for me. So I think there's going to be a swing back to AVOD, which makes probably CTV quite exciting for next year. At the minute, in Europe, it's still kind of just noise, if you will, excitement, but no real scale. But with this and the likes of the Fire stuff from Amazon, Fire Stick, is that it?
Yeah, Fire TV.
Fire Stick. TV. Yeah. You know, and obviously Roku are in there as well, but they've got their own weird data zoo interface. I don't know how that's going to work for the rest of the market. I don't think that they're going to have to open that up internationally, I think, because I don't think anybody's going to bother their arse just buying Roku stuff. I mean, I know they've got scale in the US, but outside of the US, it's just they're piggybacking on Sky here, so that could be interesting. But there's going to be a ton of opportunity. I like this. I like the ITV, opportunity. The Planet V. Is it Planet V? Planet V.
Yeah.
So there's going to be lots more opportunity coming down the pipes.
I 100% agree. Just a couple of points as well. I completely agree about Hulu. I think the Disney Plus, because it's called Disney Plus, the brand is already geared towards like child-friendly and things like that. And they have a number of titles that are sort of, have a vice clause against them, let's say, that need to be put on the Hulu platform. And I think that's going to be really interesting, that the fact that they're going to offer both. I also think that Amazon Prime is just in a unique position here. It's the greatest business bundle in the world, apart from Microsoft Office. You know, 70 quid a year, I get Amazon Prime, I get next day delivery, and loads of other benefits. Yeah,
you're starting to get sports involved.
I've had the Premier League this month.
And they have the Premier League on Boxing Day / St. Stephen's Day. They have all the games, which I think is going to be a shit show.
It's a no-brainer for me. I heard someone the other day say, I've just cancelled my Amazon Prime, and they have been to every football stadium in the country. They are obsessed with football. And I was like, you're mad. The timing couldn't be worse. I just see that happening more and more. And
do you think
it's just a great business bundle? I don't think Apple have managed to bundle their music or TV service in the same way. And I think Netflix has its position as a market leader or first mover, let's say. But it has to keep up with creating new and exciting things.
You talk about Apple.
No, Netflix now.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it all comes down to original content for them, whereas it doesn't necessarily for Amazon Prime, because Amazon also is a search engine for any film. So if they don't have it, you can buy it.
Which is why I bought loads of films off Amazon.
And I have as well, because you go, oh, it's not on Netflix. Oh, let's try Amazon. Oh, it's not included with Prime. Oh, it's only £4.49. Let's do it.
It's the value-added proposition.
And you're like, look,
now you're hooked in. I can't leave now because I got 100 fucking films I bought over the last 3 years. They've literally got me by the short and curly.
So I just think I think the bundling of Amazon is just a completely different ball game to what anyone else is doing. And I mean, going back to original content, sorry, we're getting off topic here, but going back to original content, I can't wait for Spotify to launch their first like exclusive album. Imagine when they go, okay, Justin Bieber's new album is only on Spotify. You can't even get it on the radio. That will be huge.
Do you think that
will change that business?
Do you think that it's happened? Because like that's...
I think that will happen,
Do you think that Apple...
Jay-Z tried to do it with his Tidal platform.
Yeah, yeah.
His music was only on there. And they just didn't have the user base or the pull to go and do it.
They've partnered now, actually, Tidal and Spotify.
But also, because Spotify have a pretty good ad model for the freemium service, if you do something exclusive, the barrier to entry is so low for someone that loves that artist that why wouldn't they? They're going to create an account, then they're going to get, you know, fed up of listening to ads in between, and then they're going to sign up. Yeah. And so I just think that it all comes down to original content and good bundling offers.
So I would make a prediction here, right? I know this is quite wild.
Is this on your list already?
No, this is actually not. I have another 20 predictions. I can
you love gravy as well as pop.
No, I think that there's a couple of companies that are interesting, right? So Roku, I think Facebook might end up buying Roku because it's that way into TV, right? And own that layer. I think Apple, if they want to, Apple could basically, like Scott Galloway said, Apple could triple their market cap. They could be a $3 trillion if they can get this recurring Rundle shit going, right? So why would they not buy Spotify, right? And Disney, and they have enough cash in the bank to buy both of them. And I know that's crazy because they got $250 billion. Why would you buy that? God, it's just sitting in the Cayman Islands. If you literally bought those two companies, you'd fill that gap straight away. You'd have your back catalogue and you'd have Spotify. And two companies that could fit well with the Apple ethos. You know, Apple has that brand. You know, you could see Disney sitting well with Apple. And you could see Spotify sitting well with Apple. And I think
if they don't, Amazon might. Amazon might buy Spotify as well. Spotify
are a really good company.
To tie up their Amazon audio side. Spotify are monopolizing audio. So do Apple want it or do Amazon want it? I think someone's going to come in and do it.
Or Google. Highly likely. Spotify are definitely in the frame for being bought. But one of the questions I want to ask you, both of you, is actually, do you think that Amazon would spin out their sort of website. Media, their media stuff, right? Their media business as an AVOD proposition and literally just got like TV budgets. So you'd still keep your main thing and obviously layer in different thing, but spin out the media business and make it ad funded.
I mean, they could easily.
The whole cycle then, like literally.
The way Amazon advertising services is going as well, I think it will be in some roadmap somewhere to do it.
He has to do a presentation. Was it five documents or whatever? I don't know. Bezos has got some presentation.
Five slide presentation. Five slides.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
I think it's definitely a possibility. I think we're a couple of years off because I think they still are looking to eat more of Google and Facebook's
share
before they go down that route of trying to take on all the TV companies as well.
It is interesting as well. Like,
they can't do everything.
No, they can't.
But they seem like they can, but they can't.
But the good thing about this is that Google have YouTube, obviously, right? But they can't get their grubby hands into this industry because all the media players are going, no, I've seen this film before and you just end up gutting us. So, you know, this how it feeds into actually all the antitrust stuff because Google star people, you know what? If you look at the media business collectively, we're just a bit of it. There's no monopoly. Oh, you're monopoly in search, yeah. But people are searching other ways. People are using Amazon as a search tool. People are using Facebook as a search tool. You know, there's other there's other avenues where you're actually going into. Like, so, I mean, this feeds into that as well, that narrative that Google would probably use this as a shield to say, well, there's a load of other stuff that we're not in, like, you know.
And also, you know, secondary search, as, you know, the Captify guys are talking about a lot at the moment, is actually a more valuable data set than primary search.
Exactly.
Because you're getting that, you know, I haven't just gone Amazon. Okay, you know I went to Amazon, great. But once I get there, you know what I'm looking for. And the same is true of if you go to the Daily Mail and search for one of their articles, they know more about you than Google does, the fact that, you know. So I think secondary search is really interesting, and as tech gets better and better, I think that will become the key for, you know, companies that are looking to do, you know, retargeting or search-based driven advertising. So
on a first-party basis, though, remember we can't...
I think Google's search business, obviously they have a monopoly at the moment, but it's not as robust as something like Amazon's e-commerce
or
Amazon
or audio Prime, or you know
or
like,
audio for Spotify or Netflix.
Nothing lasts forever, as I say.
Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens next year. Yeah. I think we're going to have another kind of Whole Foods moment where there's a big curveball acquisition.
Oh, massive. And we kind of, I think it's Apple. I think Apple, Apple have enough cash to buy Disney and Spotify. I wouldn't be surprised if they're sitting going, well, why wouldn't we? If we want to really be part of this space, and remember that if they can bundle in the media and the hardware, it'd become an incredibly valuable company. Because then you've got all these Apple customers that you can just basically, you know what, I'm just going to pay Apple.
Also,
you know, 10 quid a month and I can have an updated phone every year or all those stuff.
Also, Disney lives in the real world as well. They have experiences all around the world. Imagine if you then tie Apple products into that as well. Yeah. That would be really cool. So I think that is possible. And Bob Iger said that if Steve Jobs was still alive, they would have done it already. I think it's just a matter of time for Tim Cook and Bob Iger to build that relationship.
I think Tim Cook has done a good job, in fairness. He gets an awful lot of hard, he's not as innovative as Steve Jobs. It doesn't matter. If Steve Jobs was around now, I don't think he could innovate a new product. There's no product to innovate, right? It's just like, you know what I mean? He came up with all his products, but, you know, you can add that it was just two steps ahead. There is really no product beyond the phone for the next 4 years, right? Maybe AR or VR maybe become, but even that is still kind of shitty, right? So there's no real... But what Tim Cook has said, he's seen the writing on the wall and said, you know what? We need to become a service company. If we become a service company, we'll not only be... We'll be $3 trillion in market cap as opposed to $1 trillion. Like, Apple is... Like, if they make the right moves, they'll be in a seriously strong position. But I think massive acquisitions coming next year. There's some big ones coming.
There has to be. Yeah. The cost of borrowing is so cheap.
Yeah.
The cash reserves of these companies is just insane.
I mean, if Apple are pissing all their money down the wind with Apple TV Plus, some of the shows...
Yeah, exactly. Like, they don't, like, imagine straight away, they get Disney and then just literally just, you know, plug that into Disney, into the overall Apple package. So, you know, in the household, you might have Apple products, phone for the kids, phone for you, you know, laptops, TV... I mean, they could literally own the whole household. You know what I mean?
But the cross-pollination of the hardware, the IP, etc. is just so nice. You know, go into an Apple store and you...
I remember they got that
you
whole...
put a laptop on and it's got the latest Lion King movie on it.
Exactly.
And you're just like, wow, the quality of this is really
privacy
good.
You know, force as well. You know
you're just
mean?
you're gonna buy in so much to those two things coming together. It does make sense.
It's a clean company
but
as well.
But it's a massive deal. So...
What's the market cap of Disney? I think it's 250. Would that be right? 250 billion. Yeah, and I think that what's it?
It's live. I love it. Let's see if that
one works. Yeah. So at 250, and then I think they've got like 250 in cash. I mean,
yeah, I think you have $300 million in cash.
300 billion. Yeah.
Yeah, 300 billion.
Sitting in the Caymans. Yeah. You know, give Bob Iger a call. 40 billion would buy Spotify, and then you suddenly have the ultimate package.
Yeah. And you
listen,
could,
Tim, give me a call.
You could bundle
I can
that
broker
properly.
This deal. I only want 1% of that deal.
Oh, Jesus.
Office is falling apart here.
Messing the place up. So, moving on to the second part of the podcast. We had a great conversation before we started rolling in terms of video monetization, etc. So, James, why don't you take us through what you're focusing on going forward?
Yeah, so I started Suggestive just over 4.5 years ago now, and we built some really great technology for publishers that essentially allowed them to add video content to every article. So they massively increased their video inventory at a time where there wasn't enough premium viewable video. So, you know, we did really well with a lot of publishers. At the moment, we're going through an M&A process that I can't talk about too much.
Sure.
But ultimately, we're joining forces with a company that will allow us to offer a more robust monetization solution so that we can not only create the inventory and engage users with great content, but also provide the monetization to clients, so that we can, yeah, as I say, offer a kind of full end-to-end solution. So I'll be staying on there for most of 2020 at a minimum, and probably hopefully longer as things go well, and I'll be in charge of the UK business. So that's what I'm sort of doing in the immediate. But whilst I'm doing that,
the biggest pivot ever in ad tech.
The thing I'm doing next is I'm actually launching a fund for the attention economy. So that means that we will be raising and deploying investment into companies that are involved in esports, ad tech, augmented reality, video streaming, instant video streaming, companies that provide the infrastructure behind all of that. So really trying to take a entrepreneurial perspective with kind of thematic knowledge and make that available to investors that want to leverage these kind of growth opportunities, because naturally things like esports, video and VR, AR are going to benefit from increased user bases and increased connectivity with 5G. So we're basically leveraging that growth and infrastructural and cultural changes in the types of content we consume.
Talk about the fund, because we actually threw the mechanics, because you started off trying to launch you're still looking to launch a ETF, right?
Yeah.
So for the listeners out there, an ETF is an exchange traded fund, which is an index fund which tracks a collection of funds, and it's kind of a passive investment. You invest and let it sit there. The Warren Buffett view of the world, let a 10-20 year horizon. So you invest in robotics or water companies, because obviously there's going to be water shortages in 10 years, which I've invested in, by the way. And you look to see, invest in those companies as a bag of companies, basically a basket of companies, if you will.
Yeah.
So you've got gold ETFs, silver ETFs, without actually owning those things, just exposure.
Yeah. So the most basic ETFs are like a FTSE 100 ETF, which just tracks that exchange, and you get a small position in each company that's in that exchange. And if you're betting that the market is just going to go up, then that is a safe bet, and you probably do a better return than just having it in cash. So those are the most basic. And recently there's been many more thematic ETFs launched. So there's a big robotics one, there's cyber, 5G. There's recently been an influx of cannabis ETFs, which are doing terribly, actually.
Up in smoke.
Yeah. But and there's also very, very niche ETFs. So things like esports are being covered. But we just felt like there isn't an ad tech one, for example.
Imagine if, so I think it was Larry Levine. Is Larry Levine?
Lewin.
I keep on saying it. Yeah. I keep mixing it with that girl singer.
Triple Lift, right?
What do you call her? Levine. Avril Levine. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, Ari's great. He was on about if there was an ad tech ETF, it would be up 300% or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, so if you combine the stock prices of Trade Desk, Criteo, Telaria,
Rubicon, and Cardlytics,
yeah, it's up 133% or something year.
And then it was down from the time of IPO.
Yeah, that was in September, I think.
Yeah.
Trade Desk has gone on even further. It was at about 190 then. It's at about 250 today.
Yeah.
So that's definitely grown. I haven't been tracking the others. It just seemed like there was this kind of missed opportunity. I've put some money into ETFs in the past, and I couldn't see one that was going to cover this wave of growth that I really believe is about to happen. So that's where it all started from, and an ETF is definitely a key part of our fund strategy. We will also be launching an active fund, which is much more about picking specific companies and trading them on a more regular basis, and also a venture fund for private market businesses. There is a shortage, I'd say, of funds that are still interested in ad tech specifically, and some of these other attention economy industries, and most of them are run Most VC firms are run by the same people that were running them 10 years ago that made a couple of plays in ad tech. Maybe one of them came off, but they're not really interested in anymore.
They're looking at things like biotech. Yeah, they don't have the main knowledge, and a lot of them are motivated by herd mentality. So they're all in fintech, and they're all going to realize very quickly there's no money in fintech. But yeah, it's a herd mentality. So you rarely get come across an investor who has the main knowledge of aerospace. Maybe in the US, there's some good examples of people who really understand this space.
Yeah,
Jay McDonald's a good example.
There are also some VCs that have come from this space and who have made really good money, but they have left the space, which is a shame. They sort of got in and got out and then sort of turned their back on the space slightly.
Who are you talking about specifically?
I can't say who I'm thinking about. There are a few, actually. There's sort of three or four that are like, oh yeah, I built an ad tech business and I sold it in 2009, and then I've been a VC since.
Or I'm investing
And they've never really been that interested in investing in Suggestive, so they probably know more than I do. But I just think there's a new wave of opportunity. This industry moves so quickly. It's always interesting to talk to people, even if you saw them last week. There's something new. Something's changed. Happening.
But there is
new legislation. And I just think that that has to be, for money to flow into it and for the right business to prop up in the UK and Europe to solve some of those problems, there has to be a really strong thematic fund to help manage those opportunities.
And there is genuinely huge opportunity. So the dumb money's gone from the space, right?
Yeah.
As you say, a lot of the people who are like, fly-by-night investors and all the rest of it, they've gone on to follow the herd into other areas. So this is going to work, be a biotech. But genuinely, there is absolutely huge opportunity in ad tech right now, given what's happened in privacy and ITP. So this lends itself to a whole new wave of companies that can target a privacy first way, right? Attribution, measurement, the ability to sort of build into new mediums like digital out of home or CTV. There's an incredible amount of opportunity, right? One thing probably isn't available is available capital, particularly at the seed Series A side, right? So you've got a lot of early angel, late seed, not so much, but you can still fill the void with ad tech investors because of SEIS and EIS. But then when you get to Series A, that's where it gets tricky, because then it becomes like, okay, where are the people who understand this space? Where are the people who have the domain knowledge to understand that is a good company and could scale to something bigger because it's really tackling a specific problem in ad tech and not another cookie arbitrage play, right? It's or another Me Too company. It actually is genuinely positioned to do something interesting.
Yeah, and I think there have been some really amazing recent examples of companies like that. I mean, you just have to look at something like ID5 or
Auguri is a good example in France.
Exactly. They're actually doing something different. And I mean, I think we can probably all remember the first time we heard of those companies and then saw what they were doing, and we probably all nodded our head and went, wow, that's going to be good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the opportunity. I think the general kind of open web stuff is, there's so many challenges at the moment, which springs opportunity. So there's some businesses there. But then there's also examples of companies that have built technology that integrate with the platforms, or companies that have built technology for the trends around in-housing and independent agencies, which we've also been talking about earlier. So you just have to look at something, we've mentioned it again, but something like the Trade Desk. I mean, phenomenal success story. Obviously now a public business. But I think that without the right funding in place, a company wouldn't be able to deliver what it's done in the UK. There needs to be someone that is finding those bright entrepreneurs and bringing them through. So,
and also your experience,
we'd love to be able to do that.
Your experience of pitfalls in the industry makes you perfect to kind of invest, because you can add it's not just money. You can say, look, I can advise you how to kind of steer your way through this. And look, I messed up here, I can give you advice on how you can sort of move around.
Exactly. So, you know, we've raised our own VC money, and we've sort of scaled up a team, and then we've had to scale that back, and now we're going for an M&A, and
full cycle.
It's gone full cycle, and there have been some things that we've done really, really well. There's also been some things that we overlooked. So not controlling where the revenue is coming from. I mean, that is a huge thing. Yes, you can build SaaS for a client and they can say you're doing an amazing job, but if you're not controlling the value chain in the long run, there is a risk with your business model. And that is a hugely important lesson, which I wish I'd learned earlier. But ultimately, I've got 20 plus shareholders and no one had raised it. So, we were sort of blissfully unaware.
Lessons you learn.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think there's so much there, knowledge accrued by myself in being in the trenches and doing it, that would really benefit a lot of other people that are building cool things. And so if we can help facilitate that in some way, then we'd love to do that. We are raising at the moment. So anyone out there who's interested... minimum contribution size 25 grand. So yeah, come and have a chat.
Thank you. That I look forward to that, actually.
Yeah, definitely 100%. That sadly brings us just about out of time. James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kieran, thank you as ever.
Matt, it's been emotional.
Very emotional.
let's get some pies.
Let's get some pies, yeah.
Absolutely. That was the Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you all ever so much for listening.